House Committee on Judiciary, June 3rd, 1985, full committee work session. Bills to be considered are House Bills 2594, 2850, Senate Bills 229, 230, 231, and 14. House Bills 2468, 2253, 2660, SCR 13, and House Bill 2331.
Please. We've got a floor session at 4 p.m. There are several important issues down there. It's probably unlikely that we're going to get excused or we're going to be subject to call all afternoon. So I'm going to try to move as quickly as I can through our agenda and finish hopefully by 4. I'm going to take a couple bills out of order, courtesy to fellow members. I think the full committee work can probably move fairly quickly, and then we do have some subcommittee work as well. It's possible we might get excused for subcommittee, but it's not real clear yet. Let's go with full committee, and we have Senator Olson here on SCR 13 and a couple other folks I believe he may wish to have join him. Senator, appreciate very much you taking time from your busy schedule to join us, and though we didn't have a chance to hear your testimony or that of some of the friends joining you at subcommittee, we'd be more than glad to extend you a few minutes now to tell us why we should support SCR 13. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Judiciary Committee, I'm very pleased to be here today, and in particular, rather than take any of your time, introduce you to the mother of foreign policy as far as the Great Decisions Program is concerned in Oregon. I myself am a coordinator of the Great Decisions Program in Southern Oregon, where we've assembled legislators as well as county commissioners and other folks who have retired from the Foreign Service or interested people in the Southern Oregon area, for the purpose of discussing a series of questions each year that have to do with foreign policy. The summary of these results is then sent to our congressman and the President of the United States, as well as the State Department, and it does become a valuable tool for telling our leaders nationally what it is that the people have on their hearts and minds concerning some of the key issues of the day. Real briefly, I think it would be good to know that it's a valuable tool mostly because of the numbers that participate. Over 250,000 people nationally participated in this extended program last year. It's carried on national education television at the same time. And in particular in Oregon, my records show that 10,500 people participated in 1984. On a per capita basis, I don't think that Oregon can be said to be much less than second to one other state perhaps, or at least a leader in this entire area. This time I'd like to introduce you to Mary E. Abbott, and for the record, I'd like you to note that in the spelling within the resolution, there is an extra T on there, and it's Mary E. Abbott. But Mary E. Abbott would like to just address you briefly, and at this time I'd like to be excused to return to the Revenue Committee where I can help raise taxes. Without objection.
Congratulations.
Is that on the record now?
Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate it.
All right.
Ms. Abbott, welcome to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you. I'll say just a few words about Oregon. This program is in its 31st year. It is a national program. And I think you'll be pleased to know in Oregon it's run by volunteers. We have 160 volunteers out of the state that are carrying on all kinds of community programs, such as community groups, retirement centers, high schools, colleges, universities, and churches. And we have 210 groups presently in the state for this year. We reached, as Senator Olson told you, over 10,000 people last year, and we hope to do that again this year. One of the strong points about this is that it is not a partisan program. The topics are good for people to have all sides of the issue so they can formulate more intelligent opinions about what our national decision makers are doing on foreign policy topics. And then at the end of thinking about the topics and studying them, they're privileged to ballot an opinion. Now, this opinion ballot is sent in to, not only sent in, it's carried in and delivered to the White House and to the Department of State. And we have over about 2,000 opinions a month going in from Oregon. We have more opinions going in from Oregon than any other state in the nation. We feel like we have one of the best programs in the nation, and we're going to be very grateful for a resolution that gives us a recognition from this body. I have here with me Austin Walter, who has been in the program for many years and has a very strong program for for students at Oregon State University, maybe he could just say a word about it.
Welcome, Mr. Walter.
Thank you. Well, as an educator, one who had responsibility for teaching the field of foreign policy and international relations for 37 years, I recognize the value that a publication like Great Decisions has for students and for the general public. As you know, foreign policy is a very contentious and difficult subject matter to consider, and the language often is very complex. The writers for Foreign Policy Association are adept at providing material in readable form, factual information, balanced information, current, and they do this on a year-to-year basis so that it helps people who are normally afraid to tackle subjects of this nature to become involved. I've had students, 1,000 students, participate a year in small discussion groups. What I've discovered is that it not only increases their awareness and their basic knowledge of some of the vital issues that confront us in the world today, it enables them to communicate better, and they develop a tolerance for conflicting and opposing points of view. And I think that applies for the general public as well. And I think that the program has generated a great amount of support among thinking Americans, and I'm hoping that this endorsement by the legislature will enhance the stature of the program in Oregon and enable it to retain that position of leadership nationally that it has acquired ever since its inception.
Thank you. For the record, that was Mr. Austin Walter. Is that correct? Thank you. And thank you for coming up today. Representative Burton?
I just want to say something for the record here. I remember about 20 some odd years ago, I went into a class in political science at Oregon State, in college then, and I picked up the textbook. I'm ashamed to say I can't remember the title. I remember the author's name was almost unpronounceable. I went into the classroom, I had thumbed through the book, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a bear. And Dr. Walter was teaching the class. I didn't know him at the time, but it was a worthwhile experience. You taught me, I remember, how to pronounce the author's name of the book. That was the first step forward, and then took us through that very intricate process of trying to find something out initially about foreign policy, and some things I remember from that, and I think that was a worthwhile experience. So I'm sure if you're involved with this program, it must be just as worthwhile as that class
was.
I appreciate seeing you.
Is there any further discussion or questions?
Chair, are you ready for a motion?
Yes, I just want to clarify one point. Ms. Abbott, I understand that to correctly spell your name, we should list your first name as Mary, middle initial E, and Abbott with two T's. Okay, I'm not sure if that's a correction that legislative counsel can make or if we need to amend the bill to accomplish that. I think perhaps the chair will move an amendment just for purposes of satisfying legislative counsel, if that's necessary, to correctly spell Ms. Abbott's name as she has indicated. Mary, middle initial E, Abbott with two T's. Is there further discussion on that amendment? Any objection to that amendment? Not, it's adopted. Thank you very much. Representative Bellamy?
I would move SCR 13 to the floor as amended, if necessary, with the due class recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bellamy moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 13 as amended, if necessary, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Excused.
Bringer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. The chair will inquire of Representative Van Vliet, who I believe is one of the House Prime Sponsor, to inquire if he wishes to carry the measure, and if not, I'll redesignate someone appropriately. I'd like to move through the bills that are to be considered without amendment. There are a couple bills where we do need some amendments and some discussion, and I want to delay those a bit so we can hopefully be rejoined by at least a couple of our members who are called away on other commitments. So Council, may we move next with Senate Bill 229, 230, and 231?
Correct. We could also start 2850.
We could start, but probably not conclude, so.
229, 230, and 231 are from the State Lands Commission. The first bill, 229, deals with public records law. Currently, most records under the public records law are available to the public, and there are a few exceptions. In this bill, we deal about reports of abandoned property that are filed with the Division of State Lands. And what the bill does is make certain reports of abandoned property confidential until the Division of State Lands has had an opportunity to attempt to locate the rightful owners. The bill had no opposition. There were no amendments to the bill. Okay.
I know that a representative from the Division of State Lands is here in case there are any questions. If not, the chair is prepared to accept a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy?
I move Senate Bill 229 to the floor and due pass.
Thank you. Representative Bellamy moves Senate Bill 229 to the floor for the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Gunn?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Breyer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Representative Miller? Okay.
Just assign these.
Yeah, I think you're right, Representative. I was just waiting for your concurrence with that procedure here. Senate Bill 230.
Mr. Chairperson, this bill deals with the 1981 Uniform Disposition of Unclaimed Property Act. In 1983, the Oregon did not adopt provisions relating to shared stock and other equity. What the bill does is clarify the law relating to the abandonment of underlying shares of stock and interstate cooperation in collecting abandoned property. There were no amendments and there was no opposition to the bill.
Okay, again, if there are any questions, Mr. Brennan is here, I'm sure, to respond. If not, the chair would entertain a motion. Representative Bellamy?
I move Senate Bill 230 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bellamy moves Senate Bill 230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Gunn?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Bringer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. We'll ask Representative Burton to carry this bill. Okay, Senate Bill 231.
Mr. Chairperson, in 1967, Oregon enacted the Unclaimed Property Act in order to establish an agreement between among states to the competing interests related to unclaimed or abandoned property. The compact has not worked well for Oregon because Oregon is a smaller state, and what the bill would do would be repeal the Unclaimed Property Act for Oregon and other sections related to unclaimed property. There was no opposition to the bill, and there were no amendments.
Representative Gunn?
I'd move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'd be glad to carry it.
Okay. Thank you.
I want a district because I don't think nobody will ask any questions.
Oh, there might be one question from the floor, but too bad we don't have a consent calendar. Representative Gunn moves Senate Bill 231 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Isn't it true that Oregon is only one of three states that signed it out of 50?
Mr. Brennan is nodding affirmatively. So
for your information, Representative, but in case you get to carry it.
And Representative Burton, we are dealing with Senate Bill 231, which relates to unclaimed property compact and from the Division of State Lands. Mr. Brennan is available to answer any questions that came through the committee with a unanimous due pass recommendation from subcommittee with a motion on the bill before us. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Gunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Representative Burton, Representative Bunn has graciously volunteered to carry this bill, so you can leave the further responsibilities at this point.
Be gracious, I just told you to volunteer to carry 230.
Okay, I think we can move on with Senate Bill 14 also. Council?
Mr. Chairperson, this bill deals with file statistics. Currently, there are no provisions for fee waivers in obtaining records dealing with file statistics. The bill allows fees to be waived in proceedings for veteran benefits claims. At the subcommittee, there were some proponents of allowing county registrars to sell certified copies of death certificates for a period up to 6 months after the death. The problem being is normally after 7 to 10 days, the county registrars forward originals of documents to the state registrar, and they have, and then they have to go through a long process to get, try to get certified copies of death certificates. In addition to allowing the county registrars to issue copies of death certificates up to 6 months, there will be a feasibility study done by the health department on as to whether or not one free birth certificate could be obtainable by every Oregonian. And the amendments were agreed upon by the county registrars, AOC, and the health division.
Okay. To take just a moment, Council, do I understand that the amendments were adopted in subcommittee?
Correct.
Okay, so the bill is, as amended, is in the form to which a motion could be addressed to the floor. Is that correct?
You have, I believe, a hand and gross copy with the LC amendments 14A-3.
Chairman. Representative Bunn.
I would move Senate Bill 14 as amended to the floor with the pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bunn moves Senate Bill 14 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Delaney?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bellamy, I know you put in a lot of time on this. Would you like to carry this on the floor? We'll all be willing to help out. Okay, Council, are we ready to move on 2468?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson.
Okay, go ahead.
Council 2468 had several hearings and was watered down substantially. The only thing that remains in the bill now is a one amendment as to the analysis 2468-5, which says that a summons shall include a notice that a parent or other person may be legally liable to pay for a child that's ordered by a juvenile court to go to camp for training or out-of-home placement. And those amendments were accepted by the subcommittee. So you have a copy of 2468-5 in your local packet.
It's a little wet.
Okay, the bill, I think, has been lightened considerably, Council. It's my understanding that this amendment, or the bill as amended, presents no fiscal impact, and that the parties who initially had expressed concern and opposition have these amendments resolve any problems they had had with the bill.
Correct. The actual amendment is from the Department of Justice.
Okay. Again, this was adopted at the subcommittee level.
Correct.
Okay, a motion to the floor would then be appropriate. Representative Peterson?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2468 is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Peterson moves House Bill 2468 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bellamy?
I think we should extend our appreciation to the interested parties. It's nice when they cave in on all the controversial things and at least go with the one thing's in reality of what they can get.
I too appreciate the mature approach to the legislative process and the spirit of compromise. Since I'm the prime sponsor on this bill, I'll be glad to carry that on the floor.
You think you can handle all those major changes?
Well, just make sure the engrossed version is on everyone's desk. Council, I believe we can move to 2253.
All right, this is a bill that the committee heard in subcommittee. Currently, the statute provides for a pre-sentence report in every felony case unless expressly waived by the parties, 2253.
This, let me note for members who didn't serve on the subcommittee, the original bill, forget the original bill, this is an amendment which completely replaces the language of the original bill and comes to us at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties and others. Go
yes,
ahead.
Yes, that's true. This is what I think call a Lazarus bill, it's already been dead and is now with a new life to it. Apparently, when a pre-sentence is ordered, it takes a considerable amount of time, usually about a little over a month, for those pre-sentence reports to be prepared. And at the same time, someone who's in jail, their time in jail is extended by that, by the time that the report is being prepared. This measure, if passed, would help reduce the time the convicted defendants spend in jail because the time for preparing the pre-sentence report would be reduced substantially. It also provides that a pre-sentence report will be written in felony cases when requested by the court, the district attorney, or the defendant, and won't be prepared in cases where it isn't necessary. However, if the court needs more information, the provision in this bill allows the court to have a full panoply of information, or the defense to have a full panoply of information, or the district attorney. The format of the report will be established by the Corrections Division in consultation with the Commission on Prison Terms and Parole Standards. The committee heard testimony that this bill would streamline the pre-sentence process and free correction staff time for more supervision in the field and other more needed responsibilities. It was recommended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. There was no fiscal impact reported to the subcommittee.
Okay. Are there any questions for council or those who have brought this set of amendments to us? Okay, if not,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy?
Can a, it says the court, the district attorney, or the defendant requests a pre-sentence report on a felony. If the defendant did not request the pre-sentence report, would it be possible for the parents of the individual to request this?
Of the defendant? My understanding would be no, they would not.
I guess my only concern is this. Oftentimes, an individual does not want help, even though they may need some help. And very interested parties, which very well may be the parent, would like to have a pre-sentence report. If the defendant is not willing to have it done, the DA, I've found, has a difficulty in addressing it. Maybe it's not possible. It appears to me that there ought to be a way in which interested parties could have at least access to an individual to ask for the pre-sentence report.
I'm going to defer maybe to Mr. Snyder or someone who maybe can respond to that question a little better than I. It's my understanding, however, Representative, that in many counties across the state, those reports are treated with strict confidentiality, and to the point that even the defendant or the defendant's counsel is not allowed an opportunity to see that report until the time of actual sentencing. Now, that some counties are somewhat more, let me say, less restrictive. Some counties, some courts will make those available to the defendant or defense counsel beforehand if they're available, but I don't believe we've ever dealt with the issue of allowing a third party who's not involved to make a request for such a report. Mr. Snyder, feel free to correct or add to that if you wish.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Paul Snyder representing the Oregon Jail Overcrowding Project. Representative Bellamy, my understanding is that of Representative Stringer, but nothing in the bill precludes anyone approaching the judge, for example, or any of the other parties and saying that we think a pre-sentence report report should be provided, in which case any of those three parties, whether the district attorney or the defendant or the court, can request that it be done.
Representative Bellamy.
I'm sorry. Can somebody give me just a very brief idea of what is in a pre-sentence report? The type of information that is generally included.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy, there is, under current law, and again, one of the things that this measure does is to provide a menu approach so that it wouldn't be provided in every case unless everybody wanted, or the court wanted the whole thing. But it includes an offense summary, discussions of plea bargain, negotiations, stipulations, an official version of what occurred, the defendant's version, whether there were accomplices or co-defendants. It's a very lengthy thing that gets into the defendant's past history, the defendant's past record, employment history, financial history, and marital history, any number of things, basically everything about the defendant that may be relevant.
Representative Bellamy.
The one experience that I've had in this particular area, the parents, which we're talking about a young person that was 30 years old, found it extremely difficult to get any information to the court dealing with the psychological background of the individual because he felt he was okay. It was very difficult for the father to go to the judge. The DA, all of them claimed confidentiality and they claimed a lot of things. And I want to just say this, that you have a situation that you have a young person who is in trouble, flat out denies there's anything wrong with them, and yet there's some background and stuff that ought to be getting to the judge. It's very difficult in our system for interested parties to get the information there. Not necessarily see it, but get it to the judge and to the DA so that there's some psychological background done. That would be my concern is that it, I granted that you say here you don't want it for everybody, but it appears to me that there's no place for an interested bystanding party to get this report done.
Okay, Representative, I think your comment is appropriate. My sense is that the procedure that Mr. Snyder is suggesting in terms of that party contacting the judge or the district attorney's office. I can't speak for every judge or every DA. I'm reasonably confident that if a party were to so contact the DA's office or the court and express that concern, I think that most courts or DAs would be willing, to the extent they're permitted to do so, to try to help and assist in that process of getting more information, presumably to help the individual and anyone involved. So I don't know if you were actually proposing any amendment, but I think your comments are sound. But I think that the approach that Mr. Snyder has suggested would probably deal with most, if not all, the circumstances that you've identified. Thank you. Are there further questions? Okay, if not, counsel, I understand the amendments were all adopted in subcommittee. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So a motion on the bill as amended would be appropriate at this time. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2253 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Peterson moves House Bill 2253 as amended to the floor for the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
McDonald.
Aye.
Dunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kresge?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers on this bill?
Sure.
Representative Peterson, thank you. Okay, counsel, can we deal next with 2331? Consecutive sentencing issue?
Currently there are statutes which don't really give the kind of guidance to judges that they need in deciding when they can sentence and when they can provide a sentence, a consecutive sentence or a concurrent sentence. This is a bill which, again, this is a bill that's been resurrected, and it's not the original bill at all. It's been, there's new language to it, and the purpose of the language in this bill is to provide criterion for judges in consecutive and concurrent sentencing situations. It also provides that separately punishable offenses may occur in a single criminal episode, and whatever court imposes a consecutive sentence, it will state its reasons for doing so. It provides that where the same conduct or criminal episode violates only one statutory provision that involves two or more victims, there will be as many separately punishable offenses as there are victims. The committee heard testimony from both the defense lawyers and the district attorneys, and members of those groups met together to try and come up with some language. The committee adopted two amendments conceptually, which said that if there was a burglary and a theft situation, there would basically be one offense committed in that kind of situation. Mr. Sandrock and Mr. Bloom worked on those amendments together and came up with language which was agreeable to them. Those amendments are before you in the reconstituted bill. It's marked June 3rd. I will advise you that